This is the Fleming Foundation Summer Symposium 2020. Homer, his age, and his legacy. With a lecture by Dr. Thomas Fleming entitled, Homer's Man, Spouses, Parents, Friends.
Agamemnon is in a jam. The war is going badly. A deceitful dream tells him to attack and be victorious. The Lord of Men decides to test the resolve of his troops and tells them maybe it's time to pack up and go home. Instead of meeting with a massive protest, there's a stampede to the ships. It's stopped just in time by wiser heads like Nestor and Odysseus. Now, at this point, old Nestor advises him to muster the troops according to tribes, phyla, and clans, phratres. This will enable Agamemnon and the other leaders to know who among the leaders of the troops is cowardly and which of the peoples is brave. The significance of the advice is often lost on modern critics and scholars. Much of the Iliad consists of the heroic exploits of the different commanders, the Aristeia. Nestor's device sets the stage for all this. To mark the importance, Homer has a second invocation of the Muse to ensure the accuracy of his list of forces. And as Professor Kopf pointed out, the list does not really correspond to the state of the army now, but corresponds to what it was when they sailed. And now, O Muses, dwellers in the mansions of Olympus, tell me, for you are the goddesses and are in all places, so that you see all things, while we know nothing except by report. Tell us who were the chiefs and princes of the Danaans. I will tell the captains of the ships and all the fleet together. What follows the catalog of ships in the second book is skipped by many modern readers, but ancient readers loved it, as the many citations and references to it show. Greeks in the classical period viewed the Iliad in general, and especially the catalog, as actual history. It was even used to settle territorial disputes, which is why the Athenians were caught inserting lines that purported to give them control of the island of Salamis. The rival claim was put forward by the island of Aegina, where a noble clan of the Aeacidae is stated. Ajax brought 12 ships from Salamis and stationed them alongside those of the Athenians, as if to imply the Athenians were in command. There's an endless argument about these two institutions, the phyle, or tribe, and the phratry, or clan. Phyle comes from the same root as physis, nature, and phratry, the standard Attic word, is rather than phratria, but the phratry is related to the Latin, but not the Greek word brother, frater, and the English word brother. So it's a brotherhood, but even after the Greeks adopted the word adelphos as to mean brother. A point of view about what these institutions are and how they functioned in the Greek world is inevitably determined by how the writer or reader views human society in general. Those who put an excessive valuation on the individual, especially, say, the classical liberals who call themselves conservative, and the same people, of course, overestimate the value of the state or the threat of the state, the radicals and socialists who call themselves liberals, they will tend to see the emergence of intermediate social orders like clans, churches, phratries, tribes, as a historical phenomena that come up time to time in response to trouble and disillusion. In other words, they're emergency fixes for a system which really should be the ruling class and the individuals who obey the ruling class. Those who are like Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas, those who see the commonwealth as an organism that evolves out of marriage and family and kinship, will regard tribes and clans as inevitable and necessary forms of social organization that flow from our created nature. That is, they will see them as having incarnational significance. Naturally, I take the latter view because it's the one that corresponds to